news of the week. I'm Jack Peterson, joined this morning by Chris Bessler and Sansare Mitchell of the Sandpoint Reader. We start our show with some headlines at the state level. On Friday, Governor Brad Little issued a line item veto that prevents the Idaho legislature from cutting funding for graduate medical education programs that help train healthcare workers. Little's latest line item veto of House Bill 978 prevents the legislature from reducing funding from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare's Healthcare Policy Initiatives Program, which state officials said provided funding for graduate medical education and advanced directives. But Little did sign the three other controversial bills. He signed House Bill 822, which requires schools, healthcare providers, and child care providers to notify parents within 3 days after any of those entities receive, quote, any request by the minor student to participate in or facilitate the social transition of the minor student, in terms of, let's see, that would include using a different name than their legal name, including a nickname, using pronouns or titles that don't align with their sex assigned at birth, using restrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms, or overnight lodging that are meant to be used by another sex, and playing on a sports team of another sex. These entities, again, it's schools, healthcare providers, and child care providers, they would be banned from assisting a minor's social transition efforts without written consent from their parent. The attorney general could seek up to $100,000 in civil fines for entities that violate the bill. And that will go into effect on July 1st of this year. House Bill 913 was also signed by Governor Little, and that will adopt Medicaid expansion work requirements that were part of the President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill Act. The Idaho bill will require state health officials to verify work history for Medicaid enrollees over a period of 3 months. That's the longest look back time allowed under federal law. And he also signed into law House Bill 516. That was a bill that the effects of it will ban school districts from using public payroll systems to collect union dues, increasing teacher salaries to cover union dues, or giving teachers paid time off for union activities. This bill was he signed it with a transmittal letter to the Secretary of State that had some expressed some qualms, but he signed it anyway. Particularly notable about 516 was not just the effects that it will have on teacher unions, but also the manner in which it was passed, where House Bill 516 that advanced to the Senate bore little resemblance to the bill that came out of the Senate. It was overhauled with amendments to resemble a bill that had actually previously failed with these rules about teacher unions. So questionable, or at least controversial, manner of passing through the legislature there, in that it didn't see the same amount of public comment or scrutiny under committee that a bill of this nature ordinarily would. But it is now passed into law. Up here in North Idaho, our lake, Lake Pendere, is currently observed at 2,055 feet and a quarter at Hope, or actually 0.14, so I guess a couple inches at Hope, and is projected to come up half a foot over the next week. So the surface of the lake is rising slowly but surely, not quite as fast as I had projected on Friday of last week. I think we thought it'd be about 3 or 4 inches higher by now. Elsewhere in the county, down in Sagal, this we mentioned last week, but we'll be diving into it more today. The Panhandle Bike Ranch has been granted nonprofit status by the IRS. They will not be reapplying for a conditional use permit with the county, but will continue their legal challenge against the county. So that is ongoing, and we'll ask Sansaray for some details and what exactly it means now that the IRS has granted them officially nonprofit status. Over in Trestle Creek, on the other side of the lake from our broadcast location here in Sandpoint, construction is ongoing. Construction has begun at the marina at Trestle Creek. This project has been in the works and going through various processes of approval for several years, but it is now officially underway. And how that's going and the ramifications of the project over there is another thing that Sansaray has written about at length in this week's Reader on Newsstands Now. The county of the Bonner County Solid Waste Department is going to start accepting credit card payments, apparently. They're going to install credit card readers at their facilities, and county dumps will now take credit card if you have the kind of refuse that needs to be disposed of that you would have to pay for. You can do it now with your credit card, or not now, but soon with your credit card. In education news, the Lake Pendere School District, the school board unanimously elected Rachel Hutchins, and we'll be corrected on that if we're wrong. Rachel Hutchins as the next Zone 2 trustee on Tuesday, replacing Jalen Peters, who moved, I believe, for a work opportunity a little further south of here. So Rachel Hutchins is now the trustee for Zone 2 in the Lake Pendere School District. In the city of Sandpoint, a couple of notes from the city, some springtime notes. First, branch pickup begins April 20th. That is on Monday at 7 o'clock a.m. If you have branches that you would like the city to pick up, this is a one-day-only affair. Bring them to the curb, and the city will pick them up and take them away from your place of residence. The city also asks residents, and there's a good picture here in this week's Reader of Great Northern Field. The city has asked residents to stop driving on park grounds. There have been some significant cases of vandalism over the winter, people driving on the park grounds that really tore up the fields. It's not a harmless joyride, as city officials stated. The damage left behind has consequences for taxpayers, and I think has cost, let's see, I don't see a figure, but it's in the thousands of dollars, the damage from folks driving out on those fields over the wintertime. So please stop, asks the city of Sandpoint.
Did they say please?
I think they was a little stronger than that. Yeah, they emphasized the importance of that.
Yeah, it's just pure vandalism. If you see the pictures of that field torn up, that have to be repaired, cost us taxpayers money. I'll mention that the city on the branch pickup, they don't want you to put out clippings.
Mm.
It's branches only.
Branches
so,
only.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they might skip you if you have a big pile of grass clippings there.
A couple of notes. Apparently two ballot measures are closing in on 100,000 signatures. One for medical marijuana or for marijuana usage regarding marijuana legislation, and then the other regarding the abortion ban. Both of those ballot measures are approaching the approaching 100,000 signatures, which is more than what you need for the ballot, but counting on a good number of them being disqualified or thrown out for one reason or another, that should give them a safe margin to expect to see something on the ballot in November. But that process is still underway and not completed yet. So more on that, I guess, when when it comes to further fruition. We have a forum coming up.
It's
political season. On May 4th and 5th.
Two forums.
You can listen in on this radio station from 5:30?
Start at 5:30, run till 7:30, maybe a little longer if it's needed. But and they're going to be held both at the Sandpoint High School auditorium. So do come and attend in the flesh, because this is a place where it's we organize these forums so that people that are attending can ask questions. You could also email questions to KRFY, to the Sandpoint Reader, or to the Bonner County Daily Bee. The three media are, and Sandpoint Online as well. So the four media in town here are collaborating to put these two forums on. The forum on Monday, May 4th, is going to be for state legislators. All three of our seats here in District 1 for state senator and the two House seats are all contested in the Republican primary. And then on Tuesday, May 5th, it's going to be for candidates for Bonner County offices. And we do have a few contested Republican primary races there as well. All candidates will have an opportunity, whether they're contested or not, are going to have an opportunity to speak and talk to the voters at these forums. So it's going to be a couple of interesting nights and informative for people that are looking to decide how they might want to vote.
That's right. And I think we also want to mention the Selkirk Association of Realtors.
The Selkirk Association of Realtors also
partner with us on that.
Partnering on this as well.
Yeah. So that will be coming up May 4th and 5th in the evening. So tune in for that. Let's talk to Sansaray about some of these local issues. What's going on? Starting, I guess, in chronological order, going back to the bike park conversation. We read this headline, and you wrote the story in much greater detail. The entity is called the Panhandle Bike Ranch, and they have applied for, and now they have received officially a nonprofit status from the IRS. And what does that mean for them in their efforts to become recognized and to operate as a mountain bike facility in Bonner County?
Well, essentially, the struggles that they've been having are because the county has been defining them as a commercial entity, which means that they need to jump through quite a few hoops to operate, to sell tickets. And so initially they needed the conditional use permit to operate as a commercial entity. They filed for that. They received it. It was petitioned by local residents. It went to the courts. They lost their CUP. And from there, they had to kind of shift how they were operating. And so they worked with the county planning department. And the planning department essentially said, well, if you're not operating as a commercial entity, then you don't need the conditional use permit. So just accept donations. Don't make anything mandatory. And then you will not be a commercial entity. So they went a step further and they applied for nonprofit status. They applied to be a 501c3 with the state of Idaho, with the feds, and founded their board, which the owners are tangentially a part of, but you know they don't have full decision-making power as is necessary. And then they said, okay, we're a non-commercial entity, once they got their recognition from the state of Idaho. And they went to the county and asked for a building location permit to build their welcome center, where they would have bathrooms, where they'll accept donations, where they'll greet the people who are coming up to bike. And the county, by way of the planning department, said, no, you can't build this because this is a commercial facility and you don't have a conditional use permit to be a commercial facility. And the issue really there seemed to have stemmed from the architect or the builder kind of mislabeling on the application, because it wasn't necessarily mislabeling, because I think for his purposes it made sense. He said that they were applying to build this facility, and when describing the facility, he said that it would be like a commercial facility, because it is. It's not a house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a gazebo.
Mm-hmm.
But the county really took that and ran with it and said, well, you say you're applying for a commercial facility. And they, you know, fired back, you know, that was just describing the layout of the building. That's not describing its actual function. But their building location permit was denied. And shortly thereafter, the bike park filed a legal challenge with the county, because they said, we are a non-commercial entity, and because we're a non-commercial entity and we're an outdoor recreation facility, we should be classified as a park under county code. A park is allowable in all zoning districts, so you would not need a conditional use permit to operate a park. And the county said essentially that we will not be reconsidering your facility as a park. So they filed a legal challenge. That is still ongoing, but now that they have achieved federal nonprofit status, it's going to be very difficult for the county to say, no, we're still considering you a commercial entity. Mm-hmm. Of course, before, even though they had nonprofit status by the state of Idaho, under those grounds, the county went forward with that. But now that they've got it from both governments, it seems like, and I don't want to jinx anything or not, you know, knock on wood, but I think that the Callbacks, who are the owners, are probably going to get their wish to become recognized as a non-commercial park, and then they will be in full operation. But legal challenges take a long time, so it's unclear when they will actually get that ruling.
So as a non-commercial park, can they still charge bikers to ride there? How's that projected to work?
Yes. So what they will probably do, which they've been doing variations of, is have sort of like a standard donation. So you become a friend of the park and you donate $25 a month, and then you get to use the facilities whenever you want. And they're going to have a lot more leeway than before they got their nonprofit status, because before then, they really had to stipulate that everything is donation-based and you don't have to give a donation, that everything is open to the public. But now that they're a nonprofit, they have a little more wiggle room, because, of course, nonprofits here charge ticketed events and things like that all the time, if you're raising money for the nonprofit. So they'll be able to add different tiers to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is 170 acres, their property encompasses. And I don't know anything special about this other than what I read, what you write, and what the B has covered on this. But it seems like the neighbors have been, a lot of the neighbors have been opposing the use of this property for a mountain bike park. And if I'm reading it correctly, they just don't want to see an increase in traffic.
Yes. So the immediate neighbors don't want to see an increase in traffic on their dirt road, because, as they've argued, the commuter traffic is going to kick up dust, which is going to kill their, you know, their refrigerators, their machines that have air intake, things like that. And it's going to lower their quality of life, because they don't want to be sitting out on their porch inhaling dust from buses and cars and things going up and down the mountain road. And then that was just the immediate neighbors, but the larger Sagal community has really been divided on this, with Keep Sagal Rural, as they call themselves, sort of siding against the bike park and saying, we don't want all of these tourists and things coming through and hampering our rural way of life. And then also the other half of Segal saying, well, what's not rural about mountain biking? Mm-hmm. So they haven't really found common ground on that.
And this is a rural 10 zone, which I think means that they could be divided out into 10-acre lots.
Yes.
So there could, as an alternative, be 17 different homes built there, potentially.
Yes, and more, because on rural 10, you can have your primary residence, you can have a little secondary residence, like a mother-in-law's house or an ADU, you can have a barn. So they could potentially build a great deal of structures out there if it weren't a bike park. There are no plans for that, just to clarify. But the opposition has said, you know, okay, you say that, but this is incredibly steep terrain that nobody wants to live on. And there's a reason that it was sitting vacant for so long. So you can threaten us with all of these buildings, but you're probably never going to build those things because nobody wants to buy them. Whether or not you believe that argument, there's some pretty steep houses in
Hope.
There's
a lot of places getting built.
Yeah.
You look up Baldy, actually, you can see some pretty steep places that have homes on them. So, well, so we should probably move on to the next one here.
I think so. Let me ask one more thing. I mean, just timeline-wise, they're seeking for that a legal review for the land use designation, and they filed that, I guess, in January. When do we expect something to happen at the county, is this somewhere on somebody's agenda?
The county doesn't have anything on the agenda because it's not filed with the county anymore. It's with the courts, and the owners, the Kaulbachs, have not gone back to the county and said, please give us our conditional use permit, or please give us our building location permit. So there's nothing for the county to consider right now. All of their decisions have been finalized. We don't know when that legal challenge is going to push through. It's hard to tell with the courts, but the facility will be open this summer, regardless.
The trails will be open.
Yes.
One way or another.
They will not have the nice built bathrooms, but they will have porta potties. Mm-hmm.
As so many trails do in our area have porta potties. That's not too unusual. All right, turning to this week's paper, just hit newsstands yesterday. Construction ongoing at marina adjacent to Trestle Creek, writes Sansaray Mitchell. It's an 88 slip marina adjacent to the mouth of Trestle Creek. This is after the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers temporarily halted activities on December 22nd due to an alleged permit violation. What was that permit violation, and when did they resume construction? And how are things going, I guess, at Trestle Creek?
They halted construction on December 22nd and resumed in mid to late January. And that was because for this Trestle Creek adjacent marina, and they're very particular, they don't want us to say that it is at Trestle Creek because it is just near the mouth of Trestle Creek. They had a lot of stipulations for how they could operate. So if we go back a little bit, Trestle Creek, of course, is a major spawning ground for the protected bull trout species. And the Idaho Club that is building this marina has been trying to build it and adjacent housing for the last 18 years. Various things have happened. There have been economic crises, and they've been sued quite a few times by environmental protection groups that don't want them to have a whole bunch of boat traffic and potential gas pollution or just human waste near this protected area, this spawning ground. And so when they applied once again for their buildings, for the permit to create the marina, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Fish and Wildlife Service gave them a specific order of operations for conditions of approval. So essentially, they had to build in a certain order in certain months so that the fish were not going downstream into the construction area, so that the North Branch outlet, which is essentially a culvert, was dry. And all of these efforts were to reduce silt and sand being kicked up and sort of blinding the fish, to reduce noise pollution that would desensitize the fish and have them potentially go into dangerous areas later, and to just not kill them with an excavator or something like that. And so the issue really began because they had to begin construction when the North Branch outlet was not flowing. But this year, we didn't really have a winter. And so the time that the North Branch outlet shouldn't have been flowing, we were having flooding. And it was flowing. And so they asked the Army Corps of Engineers, the Idaho Club, asked the Army Corps of Engineers, can we install a pipe and divert this so that we can get started on this? And they said, well, you'd have to reapply and get all these permits and things like that. And so rather than doing that, the Idaho Club started construction on various things. So then they received a cease and desist order and said, you have to stop work until this creek stops flowing. Well, the Idaho Club still, even though they complied with that work order, is still arguing that they never actually violated their conditions of the conditions of approval, because all of the work that they were doing, even though they were doing it before the branch stopped flowing, they were doing above the high water mark. So it was on dry land, not affecting the North Branch outlet, they argued. So they stopped work, they waited, and then a representative from the Corps came out and verified that the North Branch outlet was no longer running, and they redirected the outlet that same day, completing it the next day, which they essentially directed the flow of Trestle Creek out of the man-made spillway and back into the main channel, which was in the works all along. They've argued that it would be better for the bull trout, and it will make sure that they're not being dumped out into the marina. And so they did that. Now the North Branch of Trestle Creek is no longer flowing. They've sealed up that culvert, and that means that they can begin work in the dry areas on their property. And they have. They've been installing riprap. They've been putting down pilings. They've been doing essentially all of the initial steps to secure the base of the permanent docks, and then also to kind of keep the riparian, the area around the streams from sloughing off into the water and polluting everything, which is what the riprap is for. And so throughout its life, this project has seen a lot of lawsuits. There is a current lawsuit filed by the Idaho Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity that is trying to stop construction, stop their approval. It's also filed against the Army Corps of Engineers and the Fish and Wildlife Service that said that they wrongfully approved construction here. And they filed a petition after construction began, saying that because the Idaho Club allegedly violated their permit, they need to start the whole process over again, and requesting another cease and desist. That request got overturned March 24th. The judge ruled against ICL Not because he said that the Idaho Club did not harm fish or potentially harm the environment, and not because the Idaho Club didn't violate their conditions of approval, but because you cannot halt work for a past harm. So essentially, ICL would have had to prove that continued work was still hurting the bull trout, not that it had hurt them. So they ruled against that. The overarching lawsuit is still ongoing, but that was definitely taken as a win for the developers. Mm-hmm. And they are represented by Whiskey Rock Planning and Consulting, which is owned and operated by Jeremy Grimm, who's also the mayor of Sandpoint. And he attested when I asked him that the property owners are going to continue with work and continue to follow their permits, and that all permits are good and full and active. So they will keep going as the water rises.
Mm-hmm. And the development is a marina, but also they have 7 homes they're going to build, a breakwater pedestrian build bridge, a boat bilge pump out station, and a parking lot. So it's a pretty sizable development that'll be constructed there. And will they be working on the other parts of that development during this summer? Do you know?
Yeah, they'll be working out of the water on that construction. And they're also putting in, for each of those 7 homes, 7 private docks. So I'm not sure if they're working on those yet or if that's going to come later as they build those homes. I know that they're trying to get the marina done as quickly as possible, considering how many times this has been stopped. Mm-hmm. So I think they just want to get it in the ground and done with.
The window of opportunity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're past our time, so we gotta sign off here. Those docks, it's probably in here somewhere. I'm just curious, are the docks that they're building, are those going to be permanent height docks, or are those going to be floating? The floating kind of floating docks that go up and down with the lake level.
You know, I am not an engineer.
Yeah.
they're definitely going to have permanent pilings.
Right,
I would assume if they're smart that they're going to be the kind that kind of wrap around the pilings and go up and down. So it's not just the fully floating kind, of course.
Right.
But that'll, since we've been having so much flooding lately, I think it would be ridiculous of them to put stationary docks that are going to get torn up when the water level rises.
Yeah, I wonder. Well, we shall see. We're going to have to leave it there because we're well over our time. Sansre, anything else you want to mention? Any cocktail recipes you want to give out? I saw that you've taken a role as the mixologist for the Sandpoint Reader, apparently.
I love a sweet spring cocktail, and I have been judged for it. you know, you can drink your whiskey straight.
Come on,
straight.
You gotta have some purists in the world, too.
I mean, that's great for you, but sometimes I want a little fruity strawberry concoction. It's not a crime.
No. Okay, no comment. I'm going to, I think we're going to pass it over to Otto's Eclectic Mix. Chris and Sansre, thank you very much.
Thank you.
An enlightening show. And join us once again next week. And join us for those forums on May 4th and 5th. You can come in person to the Sandpoint High School.
And we are broadcasting interviews with the candidates as well. We had Mark Souter and Jane Souter this week. And I believe those recordings available now if you want.
They are, yeah.
On the website. Actually, this coming Wednesday, we're going to have the two Idaho Legislative Senate candidates, Herndon and Woodward, interviews.
And then
we'll have the other House race, and then we'll get into county races each Wednesday on the morning show up till the May 19th primary.
It's an exciting primary season, hotly contested. And then, I mean, this is the big political time of year here in Idaho is leading up to May. So, tune in to KRFY. Here we go with a little music from Steve Winwood to kick off Otto's Eclectic Mix on this beautiful spring morning.